Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Welcome back. You're listening to segment of the 831 podcast, You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show on Radio MD. Of course, you can always get us on iHeart and ageproof.life and a number of others. We'd love you on Tuesday morning. We release them at 7 a.m. Eastern. As soon as you get it, rate them so that you can tell us what we're doing right and wrong. Today we have wonderful, this is one of my favorite subjects, and I'll tell an interesting story about it, but this is Deadliest Enemy, Osterholm, Michael T. O-S-T-E-R-H-O-L-M, and Mark Olshaker, are the authors. The book is available on Amazon, and it is from Little Brown and Company, called Deadliest Enemy, A War Against Killer Germs. Let me tell you what I, how I got introduced to this subject. It first came to me when a guy I knew pretty well, who was our Secretary of Defense, and who said, this is going to be our most serious problem. That is, we can deal with conventional warfare pretty well. We can deal with conventional terrorism even reasonably well. The reason it's in the headlines is because it's so rare. But the thing we're going to have most trouble with, he thought, was going to be killer germs and bacterial warfare. That was Don Rumsfeld. And that was before, of course, 9/11. But he was really concerned about it, and it is a major risk for all of us right now. So that's why I'm so glad. After 9/11, I was dean of the medical school at upstate in Syracuse, New York, and Hillary Clinton was our senator. We knew 2 weeks in advance that she wanted to come to upstate and have a town hall on bacteriologic warfare and on terrorism in general, but with a special emphasis on bacterial warfare. I read everything, you know, as dean, I read everything I could for 2 weeks on it. And when she came there on November 4th, I think it was in 2001, right after 9/11, or subsequent, a couple months after 9/11, as soon as travel was available, I can tell you that she knew more about the subject than I did, and I had studied it as hard as I could. But people who know much more than she are our two guests tonight, Michael Osterholm and Mark Olshaker. And I've mispronounced both of their names. I can't believe I did that again, but it is Deadliest Enemy. So, Michael, if I can say it that way, the book is Deadliest Enemy, A War Against Killer Germs. Michael, are we still have to worry about this?
Well, we have to worry about an entire array of infectious diseases in our modern world. You would think that with modern technology, better medical care and so forth, we'd be in much better shape than we are. And in fact, because of world population, and the point being that so many of the population now are living in the megacities of the developing world, where the slums are cauldrons for breeding infectious diseases. And the fact that we live in a just-in-time delivery world where transportation means that any bug anywhere is potentially capable of infecting someone somewhere else in the world. You add that all up, plus the fact that we've really not invested back into public health like we did 20, 30, even 50 years ago. We really are at a really much greater risk of catastrophic types of events happening now than we ever have been in the past.
You know, to go back to your point about terrorism and those kind of subjects, we put many billions of dollars a year into national security, yet we're losing sight of the greatest national security threat of all, which is infectious diseases, both naturally occurring and bioterror, as you mentioned. So our goal with this book, Deadliest Enemy, is to try to keep the unthinkable from becoming the inevitable.
And when you say inevitable, we've had a lot of infections in the history of mankind. I guess about 3 in every 100 years we get one of these, I would guess you'd call it, epidemics that are really devastating. I guess Ebola could have been one, but the one we did have in America was the Spanish flu of, 1917, that led to a lot of Parkinson's disease, et cetera, as I read through the book. How often do we get, let's educate the listener, how often do we get one of these epidemics, and how well prepared are we for a natural, if you will, epidemic like Ebola or any of the others?
Yeah, well, first of all, we really try to distinguish those events, which we call pandemics, which are worldwide epidemics, and they really do impact the entire world. And as you rightly pointed out, the real critical one that we most worry about is influenza. When the influenza virus, which normally resides in the gut of aquatic birds, actually makes its way to humans and goes through genetic changes in that process, such that humans can now become infected by it, and they actually can transmit it to other humans. And that's when we have this worldwide spread of the virus, and like in 1918, where we saw over 100 million people die as a result of that, we surely are at risk of that today. And in fact, we have activity right now in birds, particularly in Asia and Europe, where we're seeing literally millions of birds dying because of this virus in the domestic poultry area. And we're also seeing the potential for more and more human cases where it's kind of the one-off. They get infected, but they're not yet transmitting to others, which surely could be the case. So this is a key one. Other ones that are very important, a slow-moving pandemic, kind of like you might call it a glacial tsunami, is antibiotic resistance. Over the next 10 to 15 years, we're going to be moving closer and closer to a post-antibiotic era, where because of the increasing issue of drug resistance, we're losing the antibiotic power that we once had. And when we think back of how many people died prior to the advent of antibiotics because of just common infections that couldn't be treated, that then were treated and we just took for granted, this is a real challenge. And then after that, there are just a number of other diseases, Ebola, SARS, MERS, drug-resistant TB, et cetera, that are surely major problems. But really, it's influenza and antibiotic resistance in general that are the major ones we worry about.
And these major ones that Mike is talking about, these could literally alter our way of life. When we talk about public health and infectious disease, we're not just talking about morbidity and mortality. We're talking about economics. We're talking about politics, geopolitics. We're talking about borders. We're talking about supply line chains. We're talking about everything. I mean, Mike, give an example of what would happen if we had a major regional outbreak, say, in a place that produced our drugs.
Yeah. We did a survey several years ago where we actually surveyed a group of pharmacists, PharmDs, who are part of an international organization, PharmDs, and they represented all areas of medicine. And we said to them, what are those life-saving drugs you have to have every day or people die? Not cancer drugs, not many of the medical therapy drugs we think of, the lifestyle drugs, et cetera, but what's on the crash cart in the emergency room? What are those kinds of drugs that if you don't have them today, people just simply die? And they came back with 30 different drug categories, of which 100% of those drugs were generic. Of the drugs that we are in this category, all of them were made outside of the United States. None of them had stockpiles in the United States, and they were basically just-in-time delivery drugs, most of them being made in India and China. Well, if we had a pandemic influenza kind of picture show up suddenly in those Asian countries, and we couldn't manufacture these drugs there because of, illness in workers, deaths, et cetera, or we couldn't transport them on the fast freighters because shipping was being shut down, the collateral damage we'd see in this country and around the world, in the developed world, would be absolutely astronomical.
And it wouldn't matter how good your hospital was, whether it was the Cleveland Clinic or the Mayo Clinic or any of them.
Yeah, right. That's the idea of what happens
with the
pandemic.
Is great.
It's not just
but anyway,
the impact.
I'm kidding. But in any case, what I hear you saying is that most of our antibiotics are made in other countries. We don't make them in the U.S. anymore.
It's true with antibiotics, and some of those are the life-saving drugs. I was referring more to those kinds of things that may or may not be antibiotics. But the point being, even with antibiotics, is the issue that we use them so often unnecessarily, which then is what really fuels the evolutionary pressure on these microbes to evolve to a resistant place. So
what you're saying is by
that, we address in the book is just that.
Yeah, what you're saying is some of the things that we've talked about before in the show, whereby extra use of antibiotics, we select for bacteria that are resistant to those antibiotics, and mm-hmm. those can become prominent and cause more severe disease.
Absolutely true. And the one thing that people don't realize is human use only accounts for about 30% of the antibiotics. The rest are used for animals that we use as feed animals. Here in China, in India, we buy antibiotics in those little orange plastic bottles. Agribusiness buys them by the ton, by the train load. And Mike can tell you how that's contributing to, basically, they're not working anymore.
Let me go to a topic that's, if you will, really in the mind of a lot of people. We got a question on it when we tweeted that you were going to be on the show today, and that is, how has the president's budget changed, and I don't know if you know that yet, but if the president's budget got enacted, does that affect this in a negative way, or is this area spared because it's part of the war effort? Or the Department of Defense effort?
Well, we have had a chance to look at the president's proposed budget, at least at a fairly intense way. And I can tell you that it would be a major, major mistake in terms of fighting the infectious disease wars. So we surely understand national security. We very much support the fact that we need to protect our country and the citizens of our country. But quite honestly, probably the greatest national security issue we have today is the challenge that global infectious disease issues pose. Today, the likelihood that hundreds of millions of people are going to die from something is not from a military-related activity or even a nuclear device. It's from infectious diseases. And so we think that the current proposed budget is really unfortunate and doesn't recognize what real national security issues mean in terms of protecting our country.
And what the greatest war we're fighting really is, which is not against people, but against microbes.
Right. So we will, I think, be able to have some of our senators, before the budget is finally enacted in the fall, change this. Because
we sure hope
clearly,
so.
Clearly,
it's going to be critical.
Yes.
And part of the issue that comes up time and time again is it says, well, you know, that's the rest of the world. Let us protect ourselves. But the problem is with infectious diseases, we're kind of like a submarine with a screen door. You know, they're going to leak in from wherever in the world they are if we don't, and we can't basically make ourselves watertight from them. And so it matters to us what happens in the rest of the world with infectious diseases, what matters with antibiotic resistance. And we have to understand that securing our safety here in the United States is all about securing the safety for the world.
And one of those examples you give of this in the book is the Ebola, if you will, virus, and how we reacted to that, and how, in general, we will have to react to, I guess, the new influenza strains as they come around with vaccines to prevent, to quickly vaccinate. But those are, as I understood, the sections in the book that dealt with them, those may actually be threatened by the change in budget that it looks like. I didn't see them protected in the Department of Defense because they aren't in the Department of Defense budget now. They're in the Centers of Disease Control and the World Health Organization contribution budgets.
Right. I think the issue around influenza is one that, interestingly enough, does obviously impact everyday citizens, but it also impacts our military. Military readiness is only as good as the wellness of the soldiers that you have prepared to fight.
And we only have to go back to 1918 to see what happened when that happened before.
Yeah, actually more people died in that war from influenza than died from all the battle wounds and activities related to the war itself.
And obviously, it's a really important, because of the amount of inflammation it causes, the influenza in routine people, and the amount of plaque we all have in arteries and other places and other worries about inflammation in our bodies, that the inflammation from getting the influenza actually increases heart attacks and strokes. So if you're not worried about dying of an infectious disease, but you are worried about being disabled by heart disease or stroke, this is actually an important topic for you.
Right.
And in fact, I know that people have said that infectious disease will end up being responsible for a huge number of the chronic disease problems we have, whether it is the increased infectious disease from mouth bacteria in contributing to diabetes and contributing to brain rot over time, or whether it is other things. Let me go, and since we're running out of time, what should we as citizens, what should our listeners as citizens do? Is there something we can do to help bring this subject? Can we buy a book and send it to our congressman? How do we go about trying to raise this more than our own information level?
Well, the first thing we need to have is an informed citizenry, and that's really why we wrote this book. It's very important for people to understand what the challenge is, and Michael will have some specifics of what we can do.
Right, and in fact, when we started the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota, we understood after almost 35 years in the field that you know, all the scientific information of the world wouldn't change the status of our health if we couldn't translate those research papers and research meetings into actual policy. At the same time, we also know that the policy is only as good as the information that informs it. In fact, bad policy, it can be dangerous if it doesn't, if it's not informed by the facts. And so when we started our center, that was the whole purpose, was to merge good, great science with good, great policy. And we've really worked hard to do that, and we'd encourage your listeners just to go to our website, which is updated daily. It has ongoing news service that's available for free of charge, and it'll keep you posted about what's going on and how you can help influence these topic areas. Our website is www.cidarp.umn.edu. And if people just go there, they can sign up for free news, et cetera. And that's the first step, is just being informed and keeping current. And then realizing groups like us really serve as the lobbying arm, you might say, for the general citizens. We're your representatives trying to move all of this forward.
Thanks very much. You've been listening to Michael Osterholm and Mark Olshaker talking about our war against killer germs. The book is entitled Deadliest Enemy. This is podcast 831 on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. 830, you'll want to re-go to that if you haven't heard it. We had two interviews, one on blood biopsies and the other on healed health and wellness for the 21st century. Coming up, 834 is The Telomere Effect by Elizabeth Blackburn, Nobel Prize winner. She wrote the book that talks about the telomere effect. Meredith Weidman talks about the vaccine race in 833. That's released on April 11th. April 4th, we're going to talk about No One Cares About Crazy, with a Pulitzer Prize-winning author. 835, Dr. Joseph Pizarro talking about the toxin solution, hidden poisons and how to avoid them in your air, water, food, and products. Andy Weil, author of Mind Over Meds, will be here 5/2/17. And on 5/9/17, that's the farthest I've booked out, we have Harvard-trained neurologist from the Mass General, Dr. Joel Salinas, talking about mirror touches, a neurologic trait that causes him to literally feel the emotion of his patients and the physical experiences of other people. Wow, that's going to be a wild session. In any case, thanks for listening. You've heard the news of the week, and now an important thing. Go and talk about Deadliest Enemy with your friends. Talk about it at the cocktail hour. This is a really, really important subject for America and for the world. Thanks for listening, and thanks, Sonar, for great engineering as usual.